There was once a poor woodcutter who lived with his wife and 5 children in a little hut on the edge of the forest. He was so poor that he often didn't know how he was going to feed all the children. But they were happy, jumping around in the forest, chasing beetles and butterflies, running after squirrels, and laughing and singing all day long. They ate their little piece of dry bread as merrily as if it were the most beautiful cake. And the water from the clear forest spring tasted as good to them as the best wine does to some people. Now the woodcutter went out early one morning to fell a tree. It stood far away in the forest by a dark forest lake. It was a truly secret place, where seldom a soul came. Tall 100-year-old oaks stood all around, and it was so quiet and lonely that it seemed as if a secret magic lay over the place. There stood the poor woodcutter, working diligently and often sighing in between when he thought of his poverty and of his dear children, who might soon have to go hungry. Then he sat down on a tree trunk and began to eat his meager breakfast. As he did so, his gaze rested on the still surface of the water, which lay there so motionless and mysterious. Then it happened that as he slid back and forth, his foot struck a stone, which rolled down into the water with a loud splash. Immediately, small waves and waves began to ripple, which grew larger and larger. White bubbles rose up and suddenly the head of a mermaid rose from the water. I swam up to the shore, looked at the startled woodcutter with her green eyes very strangely, and then asked him in a clear voice, "Why are you disturbing my peace, woodcutter?" He had in the meantime recovered a little, because she seemed only strange, but not angry, and answered her, "Oh, don't be unkind to me, I didn't know that I would disturb you. If you want it, I'll leave my work here and look for another place in the forest to cut wood. Why have you been drinking so much, Zekker?" Quote. The Nixie asked again. "Aren't you satisfied with your lot? And you have such lovely little children." Quote. "That's exactly why I sighed," replied the woodcutter. "I have to feed 5 hungry little babies every day and I don't know where to get the bread." "Do you know what, Hoitzeker?" said the Nixie. "I'll tell you something. Give me one of your children, and I'll make you a rich man. Then you'll still have enough children and won't have to worry or torment yourself anymore." The woodcutter thought for a while, then he said, "Great, it works. I'll give you a child and you'll give me a treasure in return." Quote. Then the Nixie was delighted, laughed out loud and asked, "But which child will you bring me now?" Then the woodcutter became thoughtful. "Yes, which one? They are all sweet and good, also cheerful and in good spirits." "Do you know," said the Nixie, "bring me the eldest Gretel with the brown braids." "No, no," cried the woodcutter quickly in reply, "that won't do. I can't give you Gretel. She sweeps and cleans everything in the little house until it's sparkling and shiny, and sings like a larch tree while she does it, and none of them laughs at me so sweetly when I come home. Now don't swallow them. How about the littlest one then? She's still lying in the cradle and crying. She's causing you a lot of trouble and your wife nothing but worry and work. Give her to me. I'll manage with her. The little one who kicks and cries so sweetly. No, that won't do. We'd all be whining and crying if the darling wasn't there. You can't guess that either." "Yes, but which one then?" asked the mermaid a little angrily. "Yes, which one?" grumbled the woodcutter and scrabbled around in embarrassment at the lookout. "I'll suggest something else to you," said the mermaid at last. "Just go home with the treasure that I'll give you and don't think about it anymore. Whichever child comes to me in the lake first, that's the one. I'll get that one as my playmate." And she dived down to the bottom of the lake in a flash and came back up laden with a sack. The woodcutter thanked her nicely, loaded the treasure onto his shoulders and went home. But on the way he stopped every now and then and scratched his head thoughtfully. Happiness and joy first returned to the little hut when the father came home with his heavy sack. But when he now revealed the condition that was attached to the possession of the treasure, his wife burst into loud wailing and weeping and wanted two of the children. She tore her hair, scolded her husband for being a good-for-nothing and a miser who was only selling off his children out of laziness, and made his head so hot that he didn't know what to do. He didn't want to give the treasure back either. And so he sat there dejectedly and scratched his head helplessly. Then his wife finally said cunningly, "Do you know what? We have the treasure again, so we want to keep it. We will strictly forbid the children to go to a forest lake. That way we are out of trouble and don't have to give any of them away." Then the woodcutter breathed a sigh of relief, as if freed from a nightmare, and immediately the children were called and told that in future they were never to go to the forest lake and play again, because the mermaid was lying in wait for them there. The children promised to do so and didn't worry anymore and soon forgot all about it. Now there were two among them, a pair of twins, who made particularly tender love. One was a girl with blue eyes and blonde hair that shone like gold when the sun shone on it. That's why his siblings always called him Gold and hardly knew what his real name was. The other was a boy with dark, curly hair, which is why he was called Krauskopf. The two always held hands when they walked into the forest. And where one was, the other wanted to be too. They shared everything they had with each other. And if one found a particularly beautiful flower or wild berry, the other had to have it. Krauskopf protected his little sister wherever he could. He carried her through the little forest stream. He helped her climb over vines and roots and chased away the mosquitoes and beetles that came near her. One day, they ran off into the forest with the other children, soon lost sight of their siblings and got deeper and deeper into it. The sun shone so merrily through the branches. Everywhere there was something new to see. Flowers and little bears beckoned everywhere, and little birds, beetles, and worms seemed familiar to him like old friends. So she came closer and closer to the forest lake without even noticing it. Then a little bird flew up in front of them, shining blue and gold, and it seemed to him that they had never seen one like it before. They crept gently up to it to look at it up close, but whoosh, it was gone again and twittered from the next Brommer Strauch that it wanted to laugh at them. They ran closer again, but always flew a little ahead of them, so that they could not look at it properly. In their eagerness, they did not notice that they were already very close to the forest lake. They listened and only kept looking for the strange little birds. All of a sudden it had disappeared, no matter how hard they looked and looked up. It was completely still. The surface of the water did not stir, and large white flowers floated on it. Suddenly she watched with great unease. The little Goldie anxiously grasped Grouse's hand and said, "Come, let's go home." But he saw the beautiful white flowers floating on the quiet lake, freed himself and cried, "First I'll get you one." He was quickly on the bank and stretched out his hand for the next one, but it was still too far away. He could not reach it. So he decided to wait at the water's edge. But when he was near the first one and bent down a little to pick it, each one of them lifted up the Nixie before him, embraced him in her arms and pulled him down with her into the depths. The little god had watched from the bank, and although she wept and screamed, everything remained silent. Then a horror came over her and she ran home as fast as her feet could carry her. A bad time now came for the poor woodcutter. Not only did he grieve and mourn over the loss of his child, she also beseeched his wife with curses and complaints whenever he showed himself in the hut. Ten times a day she reproached him for his greed and money grubbing, Curse the miserable treasure whose will she had lost her child and rubbed it until one day he hung the sack on his back to try to get the child back. But he returned home in the evening, sullen and despondent, and did his duty. No mermaid had shown herself, however pleadingly he had called and begged. Everything had remained silent, as if enchanted, so that goose flesh had run down his back. Only when he had turned to go had it seemed to him as if a mocking laughter sounded from the bottom of the lake. Then he had set off grimly on his way home. But he did not dare to let his wife see the unfortunate treasure again. So he hid it in the forest in a hollow oak tree. But Loon lived deep in the forest, where the trees and undergrowth were so thickly grown that one could only find a way through with difficulty, in a little mossy hut, the old forest woman. She was an ancient, shriveled woman with piercing eyes and a large crooked nose. People said of her that she was a witch who could make the weather, conjure blood and enchant animals and people. That was why they were all so afraid of her. The oldest people had seen her creeping around the forest, just as crooked and stooped. But if anyone needed good advice, no one could give it better than her forest maiden. And many a person had already gone to her for that reason. Of course, even a few dollars would not have mattered to them, for she only gave them counter-ringing coins with her wisdom. The woodcutter's children had often seen her in the pasture at dusk. She leaned on a thick stick and busily gathered beans and herbs. She was always accompanied by a large black tomcat. He prowled around her and arched his back whenever the children came near him. But they were afraid of her and her sinister companion and ran away as soon as they saw her. The poor woodcutter remembered them now. And even though he shuddered at the thought of visiting her at her hut, the sacrifice did not seem so difficult to him if it meant he would regain his child and peace in the house. So one fine day at noon he set out to visit the old woman in her hut. He found the way only with difficulty, although it was well known in all parts of the forest, but the hut was situated in a particularly hidden spot. The sun shone hotly from the sky and a large altar was warming itself in its rays right in front of the door of the hut. The woodcutter gripped his axe tighter, but the animal did not move, only blinked at him with its small Turkish eyes. He knocked in at the groaning, "Come in, the forest woman," he entered. Inside looked very strange. Large bundles of dried plants hung from the low ceiling. All sorts of strange bones and hay lay about. On a large border on the wall were small bottles of all shapes and sizes filled with strange liquids. In the middle of the room hung a large cauldron, beneath which a fire crackled. Strangely shaped little clouds of smoke rose from it in the air, and a strong fragrance emanated from it. The old woman had been standing at the cauldron, stirring it. When the woodcutter entered, she looked at him in dismay and quickly put a lid on the cauldron. Then she stroked the black cat at her feet, who hissed like a snake, called a few incomprehensible words to a large raven, who croaked angrily, and asked the woodcutter what he wanted, who felt very strange. He stammered and stammered, while the old woman stared at him strangely and incessantly. But then he pulled himself together and told her his adventure with the Nixie, how he had given her his child in exchange for a sack of precious stones, and how he now regretted the deal and would gladly cancel it. He did not stop even his vain attempt to do so, and then she asked him to help her with her rattle. The old woman listened attentively, sometimes nodded her head, laughed a few times to herself and then said, I believe you, you don't give back what you have. Then she asked, do you have money to pay me for my trouble? The woodcutter scratched his head in embarrassment. No money at the moment, but I have brought you a few little things from my next treasure. As he did so, he pulled some golden brooches out of his pocket. They were artfully decorated with sparkling stones. The old woman laughed out loud, looked slyly at the astonished woodcutter and muttered, "That's all right with me." Then she began to throw all sorts of things into the kettle and stoke the fire, which soon burned brightly. Now she stirred the strange concoction eagerly, muttering strange, incomprehensible words as she did so, and finally scooped some into a small bottle. She gave it to the woodcutter and told him to go to the forest lake at the next full moon and pour the contents of the bottle into it. Then the next moon would appear and he could then demand his child in return for the treasure. And again she laughed mockingly. The woodcutter put the bottle away, thanked the old woman and set off, glad to get away from the eerie place. But even outside, the old woman's strange laughter rang in his ears. Triumphantly he now hurried home to his wife, who was happy with him, and at the same time he had to fetch the next treasure, since this one was to be filled after the moon. But when they examined the contents of the sack, they noticed with horror that a good part of it was already missing. The woodcutter confessed, stammering and hesitating, that he had often taken some of it, including the jewelry for the old forest woman. Then his wife burst out again in loud curses at his stupidity and unreasonableness, and they sat together again in great melancholy. But at last she thought of a trick. "Do you know," she said, "we'll fill the sack with shards and stones at the bottom and pour the gold and precious stones at the top. The Nixie won't notice if he says only the full weight. Once we have our child back, then we'll—" The man was pleased and did as she ordered, but he still felt apprehensive as he set off for the forest lake in the evening. It lay as still as ever in the bright moonlight, and its water shimmered like silver. The wood chakra pulled his little bottle from his pocket and poured the dark liquid into it. The bright silver sheen became cloudy. There was a roar in the depths. Winds and waves rippled. White bubbles rose into the air, and suddenly the mermaid rose up. Quote, "What do you want again, woodcutter?" she asked. "Aren't you satisfied with your treasure?" "Oh," said the woodcutter. "My wife won't leave me in peace. I'll bring you back the treasure. Give me back my child." "Very well," said the mermaid. "If I regret the deal, it shall no longer be valid. Will you bring me back my treasure whole and unharmed? Then you shall have your child in return." Then the woodcutter held out the sack to her, and she looked searchingly into his eyes, so that it made him boil. But she said nothing, but silently plunged into the depths with the sack. The woodcutter stood and waited, and he did not feel at all comfortable. It was a long time before her next brother came up again, but this time she flashed angrily at him with her eyes. "You have deceived me, woodcutter," she said. "Now, as punishment, you shall have neither child nor treasure." And although he wailed, begged, and promised all sorts of things, she sank into the depths without saying another word. But the woodcutter went home sad and contrite, for now he was worse than ever. But the little Goldie could never forget her little brother. He missed him everywhere, and he did not like to play with the other children. He often dreamed at night that he was standing before him, looking at him sadly, and that made him quite thoughtful. So she mostly went her own way, seeking out lonely spots and making all sorts of colorful bouquets of flowers and borders, just as her brother had liked them best. She often sat down by the forest lake, although the other children were afraid of her. But it seemed as if an invisible power was holding her there. Now it was a very hot summer day. Goldie had been running around in the forest all morning looking for bears. She had become tired, and as she happened to be passing by the forest lake, she thought she would rest a little in the shade of the tall trees. There stood an old oak tree, the trunk of which was hollow, and Goldie had often hidden in it with her brother and had all sorts of merry pastimes there. She crept into it now and felt right at home there, as if in her own little house. As she let her eyes wander over the quiet lake, they suddenly closed and she fell asleep. Then his little brother dreamed again, standing before him, looking at him, raising his little finger and saying, "Take care, dear little sister." And as he paid attention, he heard his peculiar song. The sound was over the lake and it was always the same words and tones, so that the child thought it had never heard anything like it before. And he opened his eyes and looked out towards the water. There sat the water nymph on a stone on the bank, letting her long tail splash in the water and warming herself in the glowing midday sunshine. And with her hand she stroked her yellow hair, on which the drops of water fell like pearls, and she sang her monotonous tune. Otherwise it was quite quiet all around. Only on a tree on the bank it suddenly began to twitter. There sat a little bird whose feathers shone blue and gold, the like of which the god had never seen before in her life. She preened her feathers with her little beak and asked, "Little mermaid, why are you singing so sadly?" Then the mermaid stopped singing and began to weep. And the little bird asked again, "Little mermaid, why are you crying?" Said the mermaid, "Shouldn't I cry? Am I not always alone and don't know what to do with the whole long day?" Quote. Answered the little bird. "Don't you have your playmate now? The boy with the brown curly hair." Quote. But the next one cried harder. "Oh," she lamented. "He doesn't want to play with me. He's horrified by me." Quote. Asked the little bird again. "Why don't you play on your golden flute like Mats used to?" "Oh, if only I had my flute," cried the mermaid sadly. "Then I wouldn't have to weep and sing. But the wicked forest woman stole it from me and since then I have had to weep and lament all day long." Suddenly there was a cracking sound in the forest, as if a hard foot had turned on a dry branch. The little bird quickly lifted its wings and fled swiftly across the lake. But the nix, frightened, threw herself from her seat into the water, which splashed high and disappeared into the depths. The little Goldie, however, wiped her hand over her eyes. She did not know whether it had been a dream or reality. A few days later, the child was sitting by the forest lake again. She had spread out a multitude of flowers before her, which she had picked in a nearby meadow, and was busily weaving a wreath. She was singing softly to herself, and as she was now completely absorbed in her work and did not look up, a clear voice suddenly spoke behind her. "This is a cheerful job, you little girl." The little god turned around in alarm and saw a beautiful woman standing behind her, in shimmering green robes. Her face seemed strangely familiar to her, although she could not remember having seen her before. The stranger, however, was very friendly. "Don't be afraid," she said. "I've only watched you for a little while, how you so skillfully and nimbly wind your flowers together. If only I could do that too." "Oh, nothing could be easier," cried the little god. "I'll gladly teach you, if you like. Just sit down here next to me and watch how I do it." Quote. The stranger was ready to do it right away, sat down on the grass next to the child and arranged her long, trailing garments around herself. The little god saw that the hem of the garments was quite wet, as if she had dipped in water. The child was a little surprised, for it was dry everywhere in the forest, but she thought nothing of it and began to show the stranger how to weave flower after flower to make a wreath. But the stranger was clumsy, grabbed at it, and many a flower fell to the ground in ruins. But the little god did not stop instructing her. She succeeded endlessly, and at last she held a delicately tied border in her hand. Then she shouted for joy, took the wreath of strangely unusual plants out of her hair, let it fall carelessly on the ground, and put on the wreath of fresh flowers instead. "Oh, how light and fragrant it is," she said happily. "Tell me, Who taught you so skillfully to tie flowers together? No one taught me, laughed the little god. It's no difficult art, little brother and I. We have sat many a day and tied borders. But where is your little brother now? Asked the stranger again, and appeared to the child as if her eyes sparkled strangely at the question. My little brother is down there in the cold, shivering lake, lamented the child. The water squirrel has stolen it and won't give it back. Would you like to have it back? Quote. Asked the stranger again. Oh, how gladly! Answered the little god. I am so anxious and lonely without my dear little brother. Then the stranger looked strangely into the child's face for a while. Then she said suddenly, be careful when you see the old forest woman. The little boy looked questioningly at her porridge. Then she gently stroked his eyes with her cool finger. Soon there was a rushing and roaring in front of his ears. Strange mists rose and raged before his face, so that he closed his eyes in fear. When he opened them again after a short while, he was quite alone. The beautiful stranger had disappeared without a trace. He only saw the strange wreath lying in the grass beside him, which the careless stranger had forgotten. He picked it up and looked at it. It weighed very heavy in his hand and felt cold and damp. Wonderful flowers formed it, the likes of which he had never seen before. They shone in all colors, gold and green, bluish and red. But Gold did not know that these were all the most precious jewels, so that the wreath was of immeasurable value. She intended to show it to her mother, but then she remembered that she might scold her if she found out that Gold had been at the forest lake. So she decided to hide it in the forest, where her little brother had shown her a crack in a rock, and where the children had hidden all their little treasures, strangely colored stones, pretty little bird feathers, a piece of eggshell in which a little forest bird had stuck, and similar things, and were secretly delighted about them. She set off thither at once, and as she thought of the beautiful stranger who had disappeared in such a strange way, it suddenly occurred to her that it must have been the water squirrel. As she was now running so quickly across the meadow, she suddenly saw the old forest woman hobbling towards her, who was already fixing her greedily sparkling eyes on the wreath in Gold's hands from a distance. She twisted her face into a friendly grin and said, "Ah, little daughter, where did you find that beautiful little ring? You are a lucky child. You should have a little ring with a blood-red stone if you give it to me." Quote. And she quickly reached into her pocket, rummaged around in it and brought out a ring. She held it out to the child. But the little Goldie had probably seen the greedy look with which the old woman looked at the wreath. That's why she said, "I don't like your little ring. Put it back. I like my wreath better." Quote. But the old woman didn't stop. She laughed so hard that her whole thin figure wobbled, stroked the child's cheek with her cold hand and cried, "You are clever, little daughter. You are clever." Quote. But the old lady is willing to listen to her. "Come, take the little ring and here it is. I'll give you a little necklace of red pearls to go with it. They look beautiful with your Sunday bodice." But the little Goldie shook her head. "What do I need your chain for? In the meadow there are enough little red bears from which I can make chains, as many as I want." Then the old woman whispered in his ear. "Be clever, child. Don't push your happiness away. I like my mother's little border now. I will buy it from you. You shall have a sack full of gold pieces for it, the likes of which you have never seen before. Hey, what will be the eyes of father when you come with that?" The little Goldie hesitated, but as she looked down at the cranes in her hands, suddenly the dark roller and the beautiful Nixie came to mind, and a thought flashed through her head. So she said quickly, "I will not have all your treasures, but if you will give me the golden flute that you stole from the water neighbor, then the wreath shall be yours." Then the old woman started back as if she had stepped on a poisonous worm. Her face twitched bitterly, but she controlled herself and twisted her mouth into a friendly grin. "Oh, my dear," she said, "you are asking a high price. Then she muttered strange things to herself for a while, without taking her eyes off the wreath, reached out for it with her withered hand, and stroked the wonderful flowers as if lovingly caressing them. "Do you know what the story is about the flute?" she asked suddenly, lurking. The little Goldie shook her head. "No," she confessed honestly. "I only know that the next one is crying and wants it back. So she shall give me my little brother for it. Money, I will have the flute." The old woman stood there in a soft gesture. Then she said, "Child, child, why does it have to be the golden flute? I don't like to give it to you. I really don't, but I've had another sniff at the colorful wreath. Give me your hand first. At least let me touch it so I can see if it's the right one." And without paying any attention to the little gold, she brushed the wreath off his arm, held it up to the light, examined it from all sides, and stroked and felt every single branch and flower. As she did so, her little mischievous eyes sparkled. She smacked her lips and muttered something along the way. Then she suddenly burst out laughing so shrilly that the child was quite startled and whispered, "Oh, what a silly Nixie, the silly Nix, you better guard your wreath." Now the old forest woman has taken it away as a treasure. Then she pressed him to her breast as if in loving caress, quickly reached into her pocket and searched around in it laboriously. At last she produced the golden flute, pressed it into the child's hand and whispered mysteriously in his ear, "Pay attention to what treasure I am giving you. Just put it to your lips once and you will hear singing and lamenting. Every person's innermost thoughts come forth and become sounds. It is so sweet and blissful that it makes one's heart swell." Then she laughed again so hard that it shook her, said grinningly, "Good luck on your journey," and had disappeared into the twilight forest before the little goddess could utter another word. Then she pressed the precious flute tightly to her breast and ran as fast as she could back to the forester. In the gloom of the approaching night, he now looked particularly dark and eerie. But the gold paid no attention to it. She sat down on the bank and began to play the flute. And hardly had it touched my lips when sweet, melodious sounds issued forth from it. There was rejoicing and laughing, weeping and lamenting, so that the child's heart sometimes beat with joy, sometimes tears of sadness came to her eyes, and the leaves of the trees all around stopped rustling and rustling as if they had to listen. Moths and bats scurried over. The waves of the lake no longer rippled. The fish raised their heads out of the water, and the sounds sounded ever sweeter and more alluring through the silent forest. Then the little girl's head also rose from the lake. She swam to the shore, laid her head in her hands, and looked intently into the child's face with her green eyes. Then the little Goldie took the flute from her lips, put her hands together in supplication and said, "You dear, beautiful mermaid, give me back my little brother whom you have held captive down there." "I beg you 1,000 times for that," said the mermaid. "First, give me back my flute." Then she handed the gold to the flute and put the next one to her mouth and blew a few sweet notes on it. Then she said to the child, "I cannot give you your little brother. Who will comb my yellow hair if he is not here? To whom shall I sing my songs?" Quote, answered the little goldfish. "Then I will style your hair every day and you shall sing your songs to me." The mermaid began again. "But my hair is damp and heavy and my skin is sad." Then the little goldfish, quote, "What's wrong? I'll dry your hair with my little handkerchief and teach you new songs. They ring joyfully with light and sunshine." Then the next one looked kindly into the child's face and said, "You are a good little girl. Your little heart is as pure and clear as gold. You shall give it to me, and in return I will give you your little brother." Then the little goldfish was sad and said, "If I give you my little heart, I will no longer be able to be happy or laugh, nor cry or be sad anymore." But the next one said, "What harm does it do? Your little brother sees the bright sun again and laughs and is happy, and father and mother's hearts and kissed him anew. Then the god said, "At least let me see my little brother once more first." And the next one dived down into the depths. And when she came up, she carried the boy in her arms. His eyes were closed and he was asleep. She laid him gently on the bank and the little Goldie bent over him, kissed him warmly and then said to the mermaid, "Now I am ready. Take my heart from your breast." Quote. The mermaid looked at him searchingly in the face. Then she smiled and stroked his eyes again gently, gently with her cool fingers, so that the goddy lost his senses. And when he awoke, it was a beautiful, bright morning. He was lying on the bank of the forest lake and his little brother was sleeping next to him. When he saw that, Zim was very happy. He threw himself on his little brother, hugged and kissed him. And then he noticed that his little heart was beating in the same place as before. And the little brother opened his eyes in astonishment and said, "What a spiritual dream I have had." Then he laughed at his sister. "Why are we in the forest now and not with our mother?" And they took each other by the hand and ran quickly home, and it seemed to him that the sun had never shone so brightly and the birds had never sung so sweetly. And from the bottom of the lake soft flute tones followed them, the tones so soft and gentle, as if the birds of the forest were twittering around Trauma.